Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody.
All right. So, you know, I don't know if you picked up, but we talk about Elon Musk a lot on Weird Things and After Things.
No.
And, man, Elon had quite a news week for him. And I don't mean the former magazine, whatever. I mean, Elon... Elon was his, you know, first is that, you know, Tesla's always going to pull him into news. The most shorted stock out there is always going to, you know, create news items for him as people try to, like, explain why Tesla's about to imminently fall apart as a stock because some people have money invested in it, whatever, as the company expands, whatever. He's always going to be a target and also be involved in aerospace and doing things like SpaceX, blah, blah, blah. There was sort of a kind of like two things happened. One was last week, if you're watching, we talked about the situation in Thailand, the soccer team, the kids that were in the got stuck in the cave and the cave was flooding. And there's like, hey, how are we going to get these kids out? You know, there was a rescue effort and lots of different people were participating in this rescue effort. And, you know, like many things, you know, success has many, many, many fathers. If it had, you know, fallen apart, we'd see it a lot more pointing fingers. One person did lose their life, you know, rescue worker, a Thai, their version of the Navy SEALs, lost his life trying to save the kids. And man, you know, that sucks. And my thoughts go out to that. You know, all of our thoughts go out to the family and friends of that person because, you know, tragic. But the kids got rescued. Now, in the midst of this, nobody knew how it was going to turn out. Nobody knew what was at stake. I mean, how it was going to play out, what was really, you know, the outcome going to be. Elon Musk on Twitter gets asked first by people like, hey, why don't you do something? You've got engineers. You're good at this sort of stuff. You can build things fast, whatever. And Elon's like, hey, you know, I've got my focus on the factory and stuff. But then he's like, ah, I'll look into it. And then Elon's like, hey, you know what? Maybe we could build a submarine. Maybe my engineers, we could build a submarine that might be helpful for escape, you know, helping the kids get out. Because the problem is they have these water levels were getting super high. And his thought was if you put some of the kids who may not be able to swim inside of this thing, maybe that would be one outcome.
And by the way, there's a precedent for that. There was a made-for-TV movie called Everybody's Baby, I think, about baby Jessica, the little girl who fell down the well. And in the big media hullabaloo of like you got this little kid stuck in a well that is, you know, 12 inches wide or something like that,
yeah.
This pipe, truly horrific. And some of the ideas, everybody wanted to help, everybody wanted to do something, and some people had dumb ideas like, my boy's real skinny, let's just dangle him down on a rope.
It was like, man with no collarbone, they should him it.
And then, you know, other times it's like, well, we're trying to dig down to that level, but we, you know, we aren't digging fast enough or whatever. But it turns out that a new fringe technology, and I don't want to say fringe, or just not well established, you know, a water knife. It turns out that using jets of water to cut through stone ended up being instrumental in moving very, very quickly, and they ended up saving the life of that little girl. And so, a lot of crazy ideas come out of the woodwork, and sometimes a crazy idea becomes instrumental in saving the day. So, you know, at this point in the story, the idea of making a submarine to move people around, like, I don't know enough about this situation or the things they're dealing with, but, you know, he does run a company that's whole job is to dig underground and stuff. So it's not the most outrageous idea that he should invest his resources to, you know, make this happen.
So he, at this point, he's in contact with certain people involved with the rescue. And you know, as we've seen in disasters here, who's in charge? A lot of people are in charge. A lot of different people. There might be the person who's the official government person. There could be the rescue team. There could be another team, another group, whatever. And so there are a lot of parties involved in trying to get these kids out. Because everybody wanted the same thing. They wanted these kids to get out. Now, this is a great example. Scott Adams talks a lot about how people look at different people have different movies playing in their heads and they watch things happen. And one person's watching one movie and a different person's watching their own movie. Or I like to say there's a lens. This is how I see things. This is how other. Now, we all have them. I have mine. You know, you can think like, nah, I see things as they are. Then yours is probably the most deluded movie theater of all. We all admit that. But step one is to understand we walked into the same theater, you know, the movie theater, but we walked into different auditoriums, you know.
Sure, sure.
You know, and to torture that metaphor anymore. So depending upon how
plus
you see
we also
things,
all have movie pass, but some of us have AMC's new offering.
Go to the different line, you know. Yeah. So, and Elon Musk is a great example of that. There are some people who see him and they go like, ah, he's just, you know, guy got lucky. He's, you know, always looking for PR to sell cars and do that. Everything's looked through the greed lens. That he's a greedy guy, greedy lens. It's all about PR, all about this, whatever. And that's one lens that people look at him. Other people, my lens is like, I think he's a well-meaning guy. I think he's a very successful guy. And everything I know about him, you know, I think he could be well-intentioned. Do I think that he could probably has done mean things? Absolutely. Do I think there are people who have had horrible experiences? Sure. Would I want to work for him? Probably not. But that's my lens. Anyhow,
and
Elon.
One of the other sides that I think was maybe against him was also just that the presence of a very publicized contribution to this campaign was more chaos into an already like chaotic situation.
Well, the question is, how did that hurt things on the ground though? So Elon Musk says, hey, I'm going to help build a submarine, says he's going to do this on Twitter, and people are asking him what's going on at this, and he talks about it. Some people say, why did he do that? Because it's his nature to talk to people about what he's doing. Did it interfere with efforts on the ground? I don't know if anybody on the ground said that it made things worse and imperiled the lives of the kids for him saying, hey, we're going to build a sub to try to help out. I think it brought attention to it, but there might be people on the ground who feel differently. If you use that lens though, it's like, oh, he's making it worse, but it's like, we don't know what it was going to take to get the, nobody knew.
Sure. If we're showing off the different sides, this was
agreed. And that's a point of view. Agreed.
You know,
he's a father of five kids. He's got five sons. And that's the thing I look about this too, is how does a father of five look at the situation and then say, hey, I've got engineers, maybe I can help. And then he did talk to people who had been in the cave and were trying to work on the rescue thing and said, hey, I'm going to build the sub, you know, let me try to help. There's an email chain of people saying, from people like, yes, this could be helpful, we might need it. And then Elon put it on, you know, spent his own money, put on his plane, flew it out there, went to location, saw the caves, and then made comments saying like, man, the groups that were doing the taking the water out of the caves were doing an amazing job. He was very impressed by how much water they were able to remove, which changed the conditions what they were. Anyhow, they didn't need the submarine. Submarine ended up not being needed. They did what I'd suggested, I think, on the podcast was probably just using tandem divers with lots of oxygen, whatever. It's probably the quickest, most expedient way to do it. But had conditions changed or you had currents or other stuff, maybe you did need a different thing. And it's one of those things where we go, well, nobody needed it anyway. Nobody knew that. We didn't know what was going to be needed. And then it kind of blew up because there's a lot of people ready to yell at Elon Musk and say, hey, it's a PR stunt. He only did this so he could insert his name in there, which I'm not a mind reader. I can't say that it's not why he did it. And same reason somebody can't say that's why he did it. We don't really have the capability to read minds, but that was the perception. And then one of the people, and then it escalated because one of the people involved in helping a guy who was attributed for helping to bring attention, you know, saying, hey, we need to bring in this group of divers. They have a lot of information. They can help here, whatever. He got interviewed and ripped into Elon and told him, you know, where to shove the submarine, blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, and this, of course, this person, I don't know the story of what happened. I don't think anybody does. Well, here, the cave diver who masterminded this thing, did he? I don't know. Maybe he did, but we're hearing people elevate my authority as this guy and he did this, or my authority knows this and he did this. We don't have all the facts yet. We don't know. Anyhow, this guy was very vitriolic towards Elon Musk for whatever reason. For whatever reason it could be, you know, he looked at whatever. I would say that it was extremely vitriolic. And then Elon Musk responded, and it wasn't very pretty where that went from there.
So he's responding to a Zeynep Tufekci posting about this New York Times article. He replies saying, never saw this British expat guy who lives in Thailand, sus, short for suspect. At any point when we were in the caves, the only people in sight were the Thai Navy/Army guys who were great. Thai Navy SEALs escorted us in, total opposite of wanting us to leave.
So far, so fair. This is
so Elon is saying, listen, I was invited by the people who were involved in this. And again, there are a lot of people working there. You might have the and understand a place like Thailand, you're going to have the local politicians and governors and people in charge of stuff. Then you have the military who gets involved in the Thai, the military, Navy, separate group, separate different people involved there that have their own communications, what's going on, whatever. And somebody can say like, oh, Elon, I have no idea. He wasn't part of this chain of command. Maybe this was, it's so complicated, but anyhow, go ahead.
So, Bryce. The thread follows.
Hey, let's just say right there. Okay. That's enough. Maybe already, Elon, you made your point.
So he also is tweeting in response to this still. Water level was actually very low and still not flowing. You could have literally swum to K5 with no gear, which is obviously how the kids got in. If not true, then I challenge this dude to show the final rescue video. Huge credit to the pump and generator team. Unsung heroes here. Now, wasn't the story that they entered the cave before it flooded?
Yeah, they were before it flooded, and then there's flooding, but then the pump team was able to lower the water levels down.
Gotcha. So not long after that, continuing the thread, Elon Musk tweets, you know what? Don't bother showing the video. We will make one of the mini sub/pod going all the way to K5. No problemo. Sorry, pedo guy. You really did ask for it.
What does that mean?
He's calling the person who was interviewed in this New York Times article a pedophile.
But why? That seems fairly irrelevant to
everything. I don't know why. But when later tweeted to by Kevin Beaumont, sorry, he's calling the guy who found the children a pedophile. Real classy, Elon Musk. Elon Musk says in reply, bet you a sign dollar, it's true. Which should probably say, from a social media standpoint, a bad decision to just go around calling people a pedophile.
Yeah.
I will offer an alternative theory here. Man, I have no idea what anybody knows here. I have no idea what anybody knows here. And I know that if, when you get attacked, somebody attacks you personally or whatever, then your instinct. And I think if you knew something really awful about somebody, that's probably a very awful thing. So that's good. It's one of the things well, how is this going to turn out? How is this going to turn out? So that's the thing.
Well, and there is, man, Twitter. Oh, Twitter. Twitter is what happens when you want a chat room, but you only have the ability to send press releases. That is, man, it's tough because there are so many times that you want to talk to your own tribe, but you can't do that without talking to the entire world on Twitter. And that was uncalled for. That was over the line, and he should apologize greatly.
Well, wait, hypothetically, let's talk about a parallel world, because I don't want to I want to get weird things soon. Let's talk about a different situation, a different world. Okay. Sure. Let's talk about, so there's a cave-in in Arizona, and a caver goes and helps, is instrumental there, and somebody says, hey, Bezos is like, I'm going to make Martin. No, let's talk some other guy. Bobby No Name says, I'm going to help build an excavator thing, and the caver who's part of that says, Bobby No Name's an a-hole. We didn't need his help. He can shove his caver up there. But the caver is a rapist.
Wait, hold on. Is it known that the guy is?
Maybe maybe you heard somebody said, yeah, this guy lives in Arizona because the rape laws aren't as strong, and he knows he's a rapist. And you say this guy's a rapist because you know this. You've been told this.
Then the most charitable version of that appears to be rather severely punching down and puts me in the awkward position of feeling sympathy for the rapist in this.
It is a weird brand of justice if that is the scenario here to decide this is the forum that this information needs to be released.
And there's also even if it is let's say it was known and true or whatever, right? It's number one, a bad look for the company, but also number two, the asymmetry of power really matters. That's
a rapist, Brian, who has not been brought to justice in Arizona.
But you are suddenly taking it upon yourself to be the owner of that information, and I don't know. This is
I don't know either. I'm let's watch the Arizona thing play out. So, because I'm like, where will this go? Because, you know, what if this guy's part of a rapist ring in Arizona and all of a sudden the attention on that stops the rapist ring?
Well, so here's a number of independent questions.
Incredibly charitable, I think.
I mean, I could think of no scenario. Well, in the hypothetical, if you got two hypothetical people and one of them has done something, is it right for the other person to say out loud, this person did that thing? In the hypothetical, maybe. Now add the vector of like, okay, but the person who said the thing about the other stuff, if it's true, let's even say it's true, is clearly saying it in response not to anything except for the insult that he received from the first person.
It's coming out of anger. It is a passion statement.
Exactly. This is not a Washington Post expose, to bring this guy to justice. This is the person who's saying it clearly, you know, had his feelings hurt and then and wanted to lash out.
Yeah.
That alone, I think that's the heart of the dividing line. Then you also can pepper onto that asymmetry of power and the fact that, you know, Twitter is a weird way to do it or whatever. I think it doesn't read as anything except for hurt feelings on whoever the hypothetical person is that said this part. And I think the distance and a clear head. I think they would know that, but you know, you live your life in Sharpie on the internet. You don't get to take anything back. And there are times that you, wax philosophical and it gets taken out of context down the road, or maybe taken purely in context and you realize, oh, wait, I'm a magician. And, I don't know. Elon Musk is Elon Musk and he's not, he's not a full-time exposure of unsolved or of crimes that are latently waiting for, you know, someone to come save the day. He's probably adding that to the list. So how does – and so he just hasn't responded since then or
– deleted that tweet.
He deleted the string of tweets.
Yeah.
The diver, Vern Unsworth, is considering legal action over the tweets.
Now you get into international law and what a sticky, tangled up web of a mess. I can't think any party is happy this happened. I think I cannot think of including most of the people watching it happen. I feel like with almost the only people I think are happy are those people who irrationally have it out for Elon Musk because they feel like he's a swindler or whatever. They're probably very happy about this. But no other party I could think of is pleased with it.
So adding to all of this.
Oh, it gets better. Worse.
An article came out, I want to say it was like Friday or Saturday, and it was what I would consider it was no news if you knew how the world worked or you've been paying attention the last 10 years, but all of a sudden became news, was that Elon Musk was listed as a campaign donor to a Keep the House campaign, which is a GOP campaign. So he was listed, donated $30,000 to this campaign to keep, you know, certain members of the, you know, Republican Party in the House of Representatives. And now it became headlined as Elon Musk unveiled as top GOP donor, which the unveiled part is funny because these were ProPublica records. And I've actually seen his campaign donations going back like 10 years. It was never news. He donated equally to both parties. He's been doing that historically. Anybody who wants to run a business and be able to get in and talk to politicians, you donate to both parties. It's a standard practice. You start digging into this, start looking at who does this, and you find out it's normal. But the headline is Elon Musk unmasked, unveiled, like it was this hidden secret that he had donated to Republicans. And, you know, his first campaign donations were, I think, to Bill Nelson, who was one of the senators, Democratic senator involved in the Space Committee, who has become very critical of SpaceX in some ways. And it goes to show giving people money doesn't matter as far as buying them off, whatever. But it's not a matter of all rich people donating to people on both sides. It's business people tend to do this. You know, businesses, the larger your business is, the more invested, more interested you have.
Well, and especially if whatever your business is involves public infrastructure or needs public permission to you know, do whatever.
And not all do, but most do. You know, they do. And you know, often do. Sometimes not. But it, particularly if you're involved in government funding where you need to have, when you're, you know, you need to get, you know, people to say, yeah, we're going to approve you to sell to the Air Force. We're going to approve you to sell to NASA. You're going to do this. Shouldn't be that way. Shouldn't be that way. It is that way. And so I know some people are like, ah, he grabbed Republicans. I'm done with him. I'm like, I don't think he'd be a billionaire if he couldn't get in the right doors.
Yeah, man. So here's the interesting question. Let's say all of a sudden the three of us are teleported. We're kidnapped by black helicopters.
Are we teleported and kidnapped?
All of the above. But suddenly the three of us are in the room, and in walks Elon Musk. And he's like, guys, we got a real pickle here. It's got a reputation restoration thing that I got to do. What do you three advise I do starting right now?
Delete your Twitter account.
Wait, the whole account?
Yes. Or just go dark. Stop. Quit tweeting. Like, it was cute and charming when he was breaking news on Twitter, and now clearly it's not working out well for...
I have the simplest solution in the world. Mike Elon, I'm going to send you a number. Call this person, Justin Robert Young, every time you feel like twittering something in anger.
Yeah, dude, man,
call Justin.
that is the lesson, man, is don't tweet angry.
But I mean, this is one of the articles as I was searching for these screenshots of these deleted tweets was like, will Tesla fire Musk for running the company, whatever.
It's a horrible idea.
In any case, though, like, this is the extrapolation of what was very charming a few years ago, the personable CEO who is just talking shop and breaking news with you on Twitter.
Yeah.
Is now, you know, doing stuff like this.
Question, Bryce, for you.
Okay.
Did he not do this kind of thing years ago? Is this a new thing for him to be thin skinned and react like this on Twitter? Or is there more attention on him now and more people paying attention to the tweets?
Well, sure. I mean, but whether he's always been that way or
regardless,
not.
Regardless, that's how it was. This is how that scaled up. And if this is not working out well anymore with this amount of exposure, mm-hmm. Maybe you should consider doing something differently with his social media.
Okay. Well, I don't know that he changed. I'm not saying he didn't, but I'm saying the point was like, now that he's gotten work, has he? I'm like, there was a country, an imaginary country, where there was a man who wanted to run for president. They considered it a joke because he said anything that was on his mind on Twitter, anything that's on his mind. He didn't care if he was wrong. He didn't care if he got caught in a lie. He did it nevertheless. And that man. Anyhow, you know how that story plays out. My point is, and I'm not saying I agree, but I'm like, but also, I remember like Steve Jobs. People are like, oh, this guy, Steve Jobs, he's a jerk. He's this. It's like, I wouldn't want to work with that guy. I don't want to be around that. But man, it works for him. You know, I don't know what to change. I would like to see, would I like to see like not doing this negative stuff? I agree. I would not like to see this sort of negative stuff. I totally agree. Also, this is a guy with Elon Musk who said, hey, I think I might be bipolar, you know, and I'm like, this makes so much sense in the lens of that. And it's like, I don't know. I know what I'd like, but I also know that, man, you know, you're right. Absolutely. Be ideally with that wasn't the case. But
I guess my angle on it is it doesn't matter if it's his fault or if he was acting in character, out of character. It doesn't matter if he was acting new or different. It even kind of doesn't matter what's being said. But when there is a mob forming and pitchforks are coming out, the question is, do you do something and risk provoking the mob? Do you Or do nothing and risk, you know, hope it dissipates on its own, or maybe it does. You know, a lot of things almost feel like they're going to be a thing, and then the you know, everyone calms down for, after. Or do you do nothing and then watch as they just overwhelm and destroy you? And I guess that's what, those are really the three outcomes that I see to deal with.
But like the case of Donald Trump, they didn't overwhelm him.
Yeah,
they found a base. You know.
Sure, sure. And I guess you just get cozy with the idea that there's always going to be a mob with pitchforks hanging around you. Which,
but to Bryce's point, if you're in a position where you're a CEO of a company where you can be voted out or whatever, it's a different situation. You know, that's
yeah.
a thing. Where, you know, that's there's some people like, I'd like to speak my mind. You can't because you're part of, you're head of a publicly held company and you serve at the will of the board of the directors. And should they decide you can't do that, you're out. So
Gambling
Bryce,
Man has
your
an
point,
interesting
Bryce, that's. That's in play.
In the chat, Gambling Man says maybe he'll do a Zuckerberg and try a rebrand, which I don't know that he's been 100% successful, but I think the needle has moved farther over. You know, certainly, I mean, do you guys remember just how demonized Bill Gates was in the mid to late 90s? Mm-hmm. How genuinely enraged people were and really thought of him as the devil? I think Bill Gates had his eyes on a longer term prize, and I don't think I think history will think of him fairly kindly.
Sure.
Yeah, I think for Musk's case, I think that he's in a position where he doesn't need to punch down. He doesn't need to do this, and I think that. But given, I don't know what his mental state is. You know, for somebody who admits publicly, I think I may be bipolar or whatever. I can only imagine what it's like to be him and to experience all of a sudden, you know, you try to do a good thing with a submarine before this guy comes out and says this stuff. He was getting criticized for this as a PR stunt, you know, where if you're him and you believe you're trying to help, how does that feel? You're getting yelled at for trying to do a good thing. And then, you know, next thing you know, hey, I have to, you know, if I don't give to these, you know, politicians, they're not going to open up their door. I do it to both, whatever. That's his point of view on that. Now, oh, you're worse than the Koch brothers kind of thing. And then it's like, I don't know. I've never been the recipient of that. I've never been the recipient. And I've had friends that have kind of helped me learn good social media strategy. My simple is I don't go negative, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And certainly, just as an overall strategy, I think in general, unless you work for the outrage industrial complex, I can't think of anyone else who make. There's no money in going negative for just about everyone, except for the people who are professional pokers of beehives.
Yep. Yeah. So, I think you guys both made very, very good points on that.
He has too much money to be a one-man PR team. You know?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, it's.
I mean,
not,
I know that the sub thing was not really like a Tesla or a SpaceX branded thing necessarily, but
like he has enough money that he can pay someone, to 24 hours a day be available. He's like, hey, I'm gonna tweet, and I want to feel like it's going out instantaneously, but you have a veto switch. Your job is to read a tweet and know if this is a real bad idea.
Yeah, you get a 1 minute kill switch.
Exactly, right? Essentially do a time delay on everything. So you still get to use it just like you do Twitter, but you have somebody say, no, this is literally dangerous. We wear seat belts. Why not have a Twitter seatbelt, man?
Okay, yeah. Analogy that tracks.
Yeah.
I think that tracks a little bit.
I'm going to switch topics here, if I may.
Sure.
There is an article on The Verge, which talks about something very interesting. It was an article following up streamers on Twitch that have nobody watching them. People who've been streaming for a considerable amount of time that have like zero viewers. Mm. And it's very interesting sort of talking to different people who do that and how they've been streaming and they're trying to, part of it is this, hey, I like to watch people who stream. I want to do that too because I want people to watch what I do. And sort of the reality is that, you know, there's not enough eyeballs to watch us all, you know, watch all our YouTube videos and our Twitch channels. And I think that's a very important point. I think it's worth reading because you read this about people who like, these are people who, I want to become a Twitch streamer. I want to do this. The mindset, hey, just do something, keep doing it, and it will work, is not really true. particularly in a world where there's way more people competing for smaller slots to do a thing. It's not a reason not to do it. It's an expectation to go into it and understand that, like, when I wanted to write books, millions of people write books every year. If I just wrote a book and said, yay, I wrote a book, why isn't my book number one? I would be an idiot. You know, I had to figure out, how do I make my book number one? How does this happen?
So the whole, like, the rise of streaming, and I think the grandfather rise of vlogging before it, is an extension of, like, people in a weird tangential way trying to make it, like trying to make it as an actor, right? Like, a lot of people want to be actors. A lot of people are very good actors, but not everybody makes it.
Yeah, it's a tournament, as they point out in Freakonomics. They say, you know, if drug dealers are also rich, how come so many live with their moms? If actors are all so famous, how come so many of them are serving me coffee? Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the streaming thing is the streaming thing is, like, a very easy thing for people to do, right? It's easy to, like, set up a game and a webcam and play, and it's an even lower barrier to entry than, like, vlogging, where you may have to edit or be very comfortable with your face being the primary focus point. And so you have more and more people and younger people getting into streaming and wanting to, you know, become the channels that they like watching themselves, right? Which, you know, is not an unheard of workflow, but it's tough, man. There's not enough people for everyone to be
I don't know what the tone of this particular piece is. Maybe you can elaborate for me, Andrew, but my gut instinct is it's fun. It's fun to try to get good at something. It's fun to juggle. It's fun to practice magic alone in your room, trying to get better. And there are musicians who their only outlet was, you know, once a week it's open mic night, and they know that they're going to be able to get 3 minutes on stage and nobody's going to care and nobody's listening and nobody's watching, but it is exciting, and that white hot electricity, you know, fills you, and you think I'm doing it. And whether or not people like it or appreciate it or it goes anywhere is kind of secondary to it. And I can imagine that because of the technology now makes it possible, just the knowing that, you know, it's possible. You see streams where people go from no viewers, and for whatever reason they explode. It's like, I can handle, and we talked about this in another thing, I can handle the idea of failing. I can't handle the idea of wondering what might have been. I can't handle the idea of not trying. And I think it might be that a lot of these people are just, you know, it's like, yeah, maybe it'll never happen, but I'm going to die knowing that I didn't, you know, not even try.
When I think what makes it especially tough is that streaming is very immediate, right? If you're vlogging or you're making, like, a YouTube Let's Play channel, whatever, you are recording it alone and then putting it out and hoping people come see it after the fact. Whereas, you know, there are some people in this article who've streamed to zero people for years, over a year, multiple, for very long time, amounts of times. And that has to be incredibly crushing, like, not even frustrating, but, like, crushing after a certain point.
There are many reasons to get into this. There are many reasons, ways, and outcomes you can get out of that. I would say that the problem I run into, and yes, it's people point out, there are YouTube videos with no views, there are podcasts with no listeners, there's books with no people who've read them. And that's in the age of the internet, where anybody can do anything and produce anything. Doesn't mean that you're going to get you have the potential to go from zero to a million, but that doesn't mean that you're going to end up somewhere in between. It means it's more likely to be zero. That being said, like, my frustration kind of comes from people who walk into it waiting for the blue fairy to come along and grant them a wish. They think that because I showed up, that's all I need to do, and forget the fact that there's a million other Twitch streamers with zero people. Why you? Why you? Why you? And you have to make the difference. You have to build your craft and you have to stand out. And if you want success, if you want more viewers, if you want this thing to work, and you're doing it 6 months in and nobody's watching you, I'm going to say this. Give up. I don't really mean give up. Give up. I mean keep trying. Just give up. But if you're really at it, keep at it. You can make it happen. Just give up your dream right now. For those of you that listen to the subtext of this, it's like you figure it out, get smarter, you know, and that's the thing that, you, and it's, what does that mean? You study success. When I decided to self-publish, what did I do? I looked at Scott Sigler. What's Scott doing? Scott's writing one, things that people like. Scott writes stories that people like. Scott picks, you know, genre that he wanted to write in. Scott did that. Scott promoted like crazy. He gave his books away free in podcasts. I said, I tell other like aspiring writers, like, oh, I do my books, I give them away free in podcasts. I did this. Like, what? Why would you do that? I want to make money. I'm like, well, great. Good luck to you. I wish you success. If you think you're owed this success just by you deciding to go do this, you're going to probably fail. I looked at people who were doing things that worked, and I said, step one, make sure your books are good. I read books on writing, you know? And then I looked at Scott. I looked at successful people and said, what did he do? Now, I didn't follow Scott's formula exactly, you know, because I was a different guy. But anyhow, point is, if you have zero followers and things aren't working, give up, change things. Just quit now. Look around at success, figure out what's doing. Just stop now and do something else.
And I think for streamers, a lot of people stream by themselves or will do, you know, Justin does a lot of one mic stuff and he's been doing it for a very long time and is very good at it. I think of like the things that I like to watch as someone who watches lots of streams and YouTube stuff is like, I like to watch chemistry between people, right? I think, you know, it, more so than just making connections, like having just people there and that dynamic between either, whether they like each other or not, whether they're funny together or not, like there is an incredible amount of synergy that happens when you're putting multiple personalities together that I think some people who are streaming to zero viewers are maybe afraid of or just don't have the connections to, you know, to bring someone in. But like if I was asked looking for advice as someone getting into streaming right now, it would be to have a partner, to have someone to be your personality, because that's what's going to attract people is personality more so than whatever new game is going to attract the current wave of people looking for the new game. It's people who can be entertaining and build a community and connect with the people who are in the chat room. And that's the secret sauce for a lot of time that I think a lot of people just can't get over that hump.
Yeah, I really look forward to reading this article and finding out like what it is people want, because you know,
it would be you, Brian. I mean, people want what you have. I mean, literally. I mean, that's what most people, they want to have what you have.
Right. Well, and there's different parts of it. For example, you know, we've all talked about how bad the BB Live show was when it got started, but that was me recognizing.
It was the worst.
That was me recognizing that I needed a safe place to be bad so I could become good. And, you know, 50 people, you know, compared to nowadays, might as well have been zero. But it was enough
of
an audience.
You just insulted 50 people, Brian.
Yeah, 50 people is very different from zero still.
Sure. Sorry. Yeah. But here's my point is even if the number was zero, the structure, the fact that we are starting a show, and even if I'm playing, let's pretend we're doing a show to an audience of nobody, you're going to be dialed in and you're going to handle it in a way that you don't if the camera's not even turned on. So it's like you have to begin by turning the camera on in order to practice. So it could be that they just want to get the practice, the training to find out. You know, or it could be that they actually don't want an audience ever. What they like is feeling like having a channel and feeling like they're doing a thing. And maybe that's its own reward, you know, feeling like sitting down and at a microphone and talking like you know something and like you're right about things probably feels good enough for them to do it. And for whatever reason, they don't want to listen to the feedback that they're getting. For whatever reason, they don't want to change. Oh, I don't want to compromise my art or whatever. That is them refusing to listen to the niche that is open, because somewhere is an open niche. And that is, there are whispers from it saying, hey, if you did this, you'll get more people. If you reached out and cross pollinated, if you brought in a co-host, if you tightened up your performance, if you pre-wrote bits, there's a million things you can do to answer the call of the niche. And I suspect a lot of these folks are refusing to do that. They're getting just the part they want out of it. And by not adjusting to the reality of around them, I could imagine you would end up for years and years talking to exactly zero people.
Yeah, there are going to be a lot of different stories there. I know that, and you know, on one hand, like, I mean, I have friends talk about, oh yeah, my friend's kid, they want to be a YouTuber, and you know, and it's there is this. It's like, remember the movie like Hoop Dreams talks about, like, these kids who want to be, you know, basketball players, and the reality of this. And then and YouTube's, you know, magnified that like a millionfold. You're a kid, you know, you're a kid. Now your favorite stars are YouTubers, and you're like, hey, that's a viable thing I want to do. The numbers, nobody cares about the numbers of like how hard it is to do it. And, you know, because one, it's numbers, and we're, you know, we're taught this sort of like, you can do it sort of thing, and you'll find your thing. And we talked about this. Were you on the episode where we talked about the research that shows passion is something that's developed, not found?
No, but I think that's a really interesting idea. I totally believe that.
This research studies, you know, some really good research says that that's the thing. People who kept looking to find their passion didn't really find it. People who just stuck with one thing and developed it decide, yeah, I'm passionate for this now. I, you know, I'm a guy that does extremely unrealistic things. We all are, you know, and I will let the odds affect me, though. Like, you know, people said, oh, you ever thought about acting? Not a lot of people have said that to me, but, you know, somebody could have said that once, you know. And my response is, if I wanted to be an actor, I would direct and act. I would direct, write, and act. I would not just say show up in Hollywood and go on auditions and try to get a job as an actor, because to me, that's stupid. For me, for the way I play things, the chance of success on that are extremely limited. Talent is an assumption. You're going to assume that everybody walks through the door has enough talent to do the job. Everything else kind of becomes so many other factors you have no control over. I prefer things I can control, to my own detriment sometimes. But people aren't taught, and that's part of why we do after things, like, hey, I want to be a YouTuber. Great. You can't just have a channel, or you can't just hop on Twitch and hope people show up by just doing it over and over again. That's dumb. It's really dumb. I'm going to use the word dumb and mean that it is dumb. It's like me writing a book, put it on Amazon. It is that belief that the magical forces that make the world work have chosen you. They decided that you going to be lucky and expensive everybody else. So strategy, strategy, strategy.
Yeah. I mean, connecting with people is huge. You know, you even if everybody in this article is let's say that they're good, or that they're trying to fill a niche, or whatever, they have all of the building blocks for success, or whatever, like, it's partially an odds game, and partially like based around things that are outside of your stream, you know, connecting to people outside and promoting that, or whatever.
That was one of the questions that we got during the Wizard Academy course. Was there was somebody who was a late teenager who was like, how do you get anybody to watch your video? And then and the answer is like, well, do you know 8 people? And then it's like, sure. It's like, okay, of those 8 people, you can individually ask them, will you please watch my video, right? And then of them, let's say of those 8, 4 of them say they will, but 2 of them actually do. Well, if those same 2 people keep going, then what you have is you have a core audience of the 2 people who actually are showing up every time you post a video. You have an audience to an expansion audience that you can audition to by figuring out how to take those 2 people and invigorate them and get them excited, so that or to figure out what you're not doing for those 2 more people in the expanded audience that would get them into that. And then and you keep going from there to where finally you get all 8 people, and then you say, okay, hey, who do you know that knows, and find out who the rest of your expanded audience is. And then you figure out how can we satisfy them and lure them in, until you finally create this gravitational well where all of a sudden you have people you've never met or know who they are, but who fell into your orbit and like your work. Mm-hmm. And then they are naturally recommending it to other people. But it begins like a black hole starts with just 1 or 2 molecules, right? That's science.
How many molecules?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. It's got to start somewhere, right?
But yeah, it's a people game, right? Like, you can't rely on the Twitch browse feature to bring you people. You got to be out there and
knock
on doors.
Is if you go in there and you're commenting in other people's threads, not, hey, go watch my stream. That is the worst thing in the world you can do. That is the way to become cancer. Is if you're in there commenting and participating and whatnot, and then you do have a stream, the people who you're benefiting will go, oh, check out. Oh, this is cool. So we've done this. You know, we have an entire network based upon, in large part, about people who are participating and supporting what we're doing. And like, hey, cool, check this out. We promote the works of people. Maybe we should think about doing like a special like podcast showcase episode too at some point, where we do like 5 minutes of, you know, different podcasts.
You know, we are working on a stream team sort of organization now for people who are streaming and would like, you know, however much runoff help we can give them, be it on Twitch or between each other, you know, sharing resources, sharing people, doing promotion on each other's shows, you know.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
We don't look at it as helping other people out or giving back. It's profiting off of unexploited resources, you know, is energy people willing to do something and say, hey, there's something to be, there could be something gold here. It sucks to do something, not have anybody watch. I'm constantly depressed, frequently depressed when I tell people, do this
took
thing.
A hard left turn.
When I'm like,
crying myself to sleep every night.
Do this thing. And people are like, yeah, you know, I just hate, like, I have friends who are like, they want to do stuff. I hate having the same conversation I've had with them for the last 10 years. I'm like, why don't you this? Yeah, I thought about this. Like, all right, you're waiting for the magic answer. You're waiting for, you know, somebody to say, no, here's the easy way. You spent 10 years looking for the easy way. Didn't happen. Not going to happen. Never going to happen now. Give up. Don't really give up.
The way I think of it is, look, man, everybody wants to harvest before they sow. And the fact is you got to keep providing value and keep getting better and build a beautiful, beautiful garden. And then at some point people start visiting it on their own.
You know, I went to a convention last week, was at WesterCon. It's a very small convention. I've gone to some of these smaller ones. I have friends that get involved, like, do you want to do this? And I look at my calendar and I can't come up with an excuse not to do it. And I end up doing it and had a wonderful trip there. Very, very nice people. At some of these small cons, if I was a writer today and I wanted to build up a fan base, I would be doing everything I need to do to self-publish and push myself out there. I do the podcast. I do all this. And I would be going to conventions. I would be going to conventions and participating in panels is one way to do it. Being supportive, talking to people, whatever. It's all back to meeting people. You know, it's why do politicians shake hands and go out and meet people? It's how you get support.
Yeah.
And as Brian.
And so at some point, it's interesting. So if you think in terms of platform, it's like if you want to build a platform, then you begin by, number one, having content that satisfies an unmet need, a hunger out there, the niche. And then what you do is you start providing value to other people's platforms, and then you harvest that goodwill by appearing on it and then saying, hey, can I promote my thing? I'll come and I'll do a 1 minute. Christy Cates fell into our orbit because she did us a real favor by recording a 1 minute question for Cord Killers, and she just kept providing value. It's like, man, we would love to have you be on the show. Every time Christy Cates comes on the show, what do? Is we talk about her stream because she doesn't get on our show and talk about how great her music is. She talks about cutting the cord and all the content that we like. She provides value on our platform. And as a result, it is a welcome reciprocation. We are happy to encourage everybody to go see her do her music over there. So the fantasy that you get to make your art and the world discovers it does not exist.
There's the carryover effect work. I have a lot of what I have because of piggybacking on Brian's success. You know, Brian and Justin and, you know, when they did Night Attack or NSFW show. And then I'm like, hey, guys, I got an idea. Did a, you know, internet show with, you know, on skepticism and said, let's do a thing on weird things. And we all like that talk thing. But I mean, I took my audience from Magic, which I got partially from Rand Woodbury back in the day when I wrote Magic books, which I grew. And then I took part of Brian's audience and part of Justin's audience and then said, hey, guys, look at me. I got stuff, too. You know, and that's where these things come from. But part of it's I got a TV show. One of the shows I got was from I did a lot of favors. And actually, you know, like my friends, Joke and Biagio. I'm like, hey, Brian, Justin, Joke and Biagio, you know, great guests, whatever, have them. And so it's. Just being there for other people, you know, it's showing up, support, liking things and doing things and then getting better. You know, if your product still sucks, it's going to suck.
I mean, not that it's doomed to always suck, but I mean, that's a different there's a whole bunch of different aspects to it. But
we'll do another episode. We'll talk about
let me put it this way. There are a lot of really bad things that have more than zero viewers. So like I'm not
sure,
gonna,
but most bad things have zero viewers, you know.
Sure.
And so I'd say I would not want to use, I know you're not saying this, but don't use that as an excuse to say, I'm just going to do a bad thing. Your chance of success are even worse.
That's true. But even worse than that is don't even bother to do a thing because you're getting ready to do it right the first time.
That's the real crime. If you don't have a process to improve or make it better, that's my thing. It's like, don't be afraid to suck.
Yeah.
Just don't decide that sucking is enough forever.
You know, one thing that I tell people if we're still in advice mode, people who like want to get into streaming is like, you know, just go and do something and find what is comfortable for you and what you like and what ways you can push yourself further. But also, like, every so often, go stop and just rewatch something that you did or go listen to your thing. And if it would not entertain you, figure out what is missing, right? Like, and maybe it is. Maybe, you know, maybe you just do a chill sort of thing, and maybe you don't normally like doing chill things, but there are definitely plenty of people who like watching chill art streams or whatever, you know? Like, there's certainly a thing where your tastes may not always align with the thing you make. There's a possibility of that. But try to entertain yourself for sure, because that'll be a very good litmus test of at least something. It's a very simple litmus test of what you can improve on.
I'll bring this up. I had, and I don't have anything to back this up on. I have no idea, but I was at a conference and talked to, was talking to another writer, and the writer was giving some advice. And this writer may be absolutely an exceptional writer. I have no idea, but something came up where they talked about like, oh, and their advice, like when you have to get through that slow part or the bad part of your book that takes you forever and you want to race through it. And I kept my mouth shut, but I was about to go like, cause I know this person's like mainly like self-published and that's self-published great, but like I don't think they've had bigger success yet. I could be totally wrong and I, you know, may have to eat my words, but I'm sitting there thinking, if you're bored writing this, your readers are probably going to be bored reading this, you know, and I have no idea what they're talking about. That was when it's like what, read your stuff. If you're like, I talk to people like I outline, oh, I don't want to outline because then it's boring for me when I have to write it. I'm like, it's probably going to be boring the first time somebody else tries to read this. Pay attention to that. You know, it's just what Bryce says, like, you know, like not to say it has to be great. It doesn't have to be great at all. It'd be brilliant, but you have to go like, oh, what's the thing I'm ignoring right now? You know? Mm-hmm. And then address that.
Yeah.
Picks.
I got picks.
I just finished season 2 of Glow on Netflix.
Is it great?
It's very good. It's really good. That's a show that is nice because it's very short, right? They're only 30-minute episodes compared to an hour for like Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
But I think the end of the season is interesting and opens up new doors for what could happen in another season. I think it's really cool.
Man, my pick is Preacher. Preacher. What, so much fun. It brings so much joy to me after the tedium of Westworld. It's just... it don't have to make sense. I just love, like, the moment a character shows up, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. They're going to do a thing with this. This is a lot of fun. And not all of it lands exactly where I want it. And then it gets certainly very silly at times. But I am 100% along for the ride all the way.
I stopped halfway through the first season. I was entertained, but I kind of sort of fell off. So I got to go back and give it a shot.
Oh, so okay. So you haven't even, you never finished the first season.
No,
yeah, I didn't either.
Okay, right.
My pick. I saw this weekend, and I'm going to pick Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, Andrew.
You sound like me. You know,
I'm very happy you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. If other parties did not enjoy it, I will not say, oh, you're wrong. You missed out on this brilliant, you know, like I saw, I happened by coincidence, I happened to have seen the movie Yes Man a couple days before, another Peyton Reed movie. And I'm like, I believe Ant-Man was directed by the director of Yes Man. Yeah, there are parts of Yes Man I like, parts I not, but it's not like Yes Man's going to be, oh my God, it's great. You got it. It's the most greatest romantic comedy ever. But I'm like, yeah, if you said the director of this, I enjoyed it. What I liked was, in a year where we get, you know, Marvel doing something bold like Black Panther, which, you know, turned out to be one of the most successful movies ever. And then Avengers Infinity War, where you literally get a story about, you know, some demigod destroying half the universe. Then we get one about, you know, a guy trying to avoid getting in trouble because if he gets if he's caught outside of house arrest, he goes back to jail while trying to stop a heist, you know, kind of thing. A smaller scale Marvel story. I like that. I like that the Marvel universe can go
smaller,
way out there on one end and then here. So.
Yeah. Very cool.
So. All right. Glad we had that conversation, guys.
I haven't seen it yet. I did not see the first Ant-Man. And so I don't know that
man.
So I don't know that this is on my must watch list right now, but
well, there are movies where I go, man, like not for me, but I know other people like things in it that I don't like. There are fans of the DC Justice League and Batman versus Superman movies. There are people who like those movies. And I'm like, I wish I could be that person. There's people who like Han Solo. You know, I'm like, I wish I saw that movie, you know. And I'm sure right now Brian's looking at me going, man, I wish Ant-Man and the Wasp was like that for me. But Brian, I get it. I understand.
I think the one thing I can objectively say that I think not even you would disagree with, I think
this movie is 94 minutes long.
Yeah. No matter how you felt about the movie, I think the whole world should agree that Walton Goggins is criminally underused in this movie.
I'm like I'm watching him want to go, like, he's great, he's good, and he's like, how? I'm like, he looks young, like, and I'm like, he's only like our age. He's not that old, you know. He's just a guy that just sort of pops up everywhere, and you're like,
cool. And he is so man, if you told me that Walton Goggins was going to be a bad guy in a Marvel movie, I let me just say I'm really glad I didn't even know that going in, or my disappointment would have been even greater than it ended up being. But anyway,
Well, I'll say, Brian, if you have a chance, watch that and then Jurassic World, and then is he too extreme?
Fair enough.
Fallen Kingdom, man. I'm not going to cry. I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
All right. I got to go study up the court killers.
It's been after. Bye-bye.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.